Okay, we've been making great progress on Hilchos Shabbos Chabura since last year. We talked about the overall hashkafas ha'alacha of let's say Melech Shabbos Lo Tasez and Yaseh, recognizing that Hashem is the CEO and we're the managers. We're not CEOs ourselves. We're working for the actual manager, which does give our own malacha a lot of importance, but we have to have that perspective in mind. We spoke a lot about mukta. We had a few shirim on different categories of mukta, and then we got into the actual malachos we've been dealing with sidur the past. Malacha number one was zeria, was the act of planting seed, followed really preceded by chorish or harisha, plowing to get a hole. But in the Mishnah, the order was zeria harisha. Then after you've plowed and planted, you can finally get to Kosher, harvesting your finished product. And then Ma'amer was bungling, kind of not super relevant. We spoke about gathering candies at bar mitzvahs and then weddings and stuff. Of course, not wedding. We usually have on Shabbos, except for that other month that everybody likes to talk about and crack out. That wasn't your year. That was the year before. Then after Ma'amer, it's a dush. You gotta do dush. You gotta crush those husks and get the seeds out. And now we are up to Zoreh. Zoreh is winnowing. You have a huge pile of seeds. After your dush work with the either with your flail, with the animal, whatever it was. You have a big pile of seeds, but it's all mixed together with the crushed husks. And the other parts, the kash, the stubble. You have like this huge heap. You know that in there is the stuff that you want. There are those seeds you're going to be using for making the bread, but it's also mixed up with all this other stuff you don't want. So what do? Farmers and geniuses, they used a rachas, they used a pitchfork. Basically, grab your torch and pitchforks, you grab a pitchfork, you stick it into the middle of the pile, you toss it straight up into the air, and a normal breeze, the ruach mitzuyah, is enough to push away the lighter, floaty kash, the stubble, the husk, all the things you basically don't want, and the heavier seeds fall straight back down, basically where you started, and you're left with no more kash, no more stubble, no more husk, and basically just the seeds that you want. Really genius, really not so labor intensive, very simple, and very smart. Really, really cool system. That's called Zoreh. I think we spoke about it a little bit last time already. One of the big questions which is discussed, which you already alluded to last time when you were speaking about Dush, is that the Gemara asks about Zoreh, Borer, and Merakeh. Zoreh is this winnowing. You're separating the bad, the stuff that you don't want, the husks and whatever, from the things that you want, the seeds. Borer is you're separating the parts of the food you don't want from the parts you do want. And then Merakeh is sifting. Again, you're separating the part of the flour that you don't want from the parts of the flour that you do want. So the Gemara asks very clearly, hang on, I'm valid. What is the difference between these three malachos? Each one of them is not malacha, but they seem to be accomplishing the exact same thing. They're separating the parts you do want from the parts you don't want. Why do I need three different malachos for this? We already asked about dush, and we said that dush is kind of in a different category. That was in the last episode. But by the time you get to Zoreh, you're dealing with the seeds themselves. You can no longer give that answer. We need to figure out the difference between Zoreh, Borer, and Merakeh. The easiest answer which is given, there are others, but the easiest answer that is given is that the goal is the same, but we know that when we're dealing with malachos, we have to look at two parts. It's not just the outcome, it's also the pu'ula. It's also the action, the thing that you're doing in addition to the outcome. We know this is relevant by toldos. There are two ways that something can become a toldo, which is just as us or if it's us read the right though, just a little bit of a different category. It wasn't done. It's not the way the malacha was done in the Mishkan, so there are two ways that something can become a toldo of an av malacha. One way is that it accomplishes the exact same outcome. Right? So we spoke about Zeria, we spoke about planting. A couple of toldos that we mentioned were, weeding facilitates growth, watering facilitates growth. Anything which is going to facilitate growth of the plant is going to be a tolda of Zeria because the essence of Zeria is facilitating plant growth. So one way to become a tolda is to have the same outcome. But another way, this is why it's important, another way to have to get the status of a tolda of a specific av is to be similar enough to the pu'ula. Is to be similar enough to the action itself, even though the tosah, even though the outcome is actually not similar. So it's important to know what is the pe'ula of each of these three malachos in addition to their outcomes. In Achinami, their outcomes are basically the same, separating the psolas from the opel, what you do want, from what you don't want, from what you do want, but the action that you're taking to accomplish that is different. Zorah, you're using the wind. You're separating open solas using the wind. Borer, you're doing it biyad. Generally, borer is done with your hands. You're picking out the good parts from the bad parts. And miraked is done with a kli. What's the kli that you use for miraked? What's the difference between a sieve and a sifter? Is there really a difference? Is a sifter specifically flour? A special kli, either a sieve, probably a sifter, maybe a sieve also. I don't know if it's a sieve. But you're sorting using a kli. Zorah, borer, and miraked. Okay, we're going to see that. We'll talk. Okay, great. That's our basic definition. Yeah.
Does the pitchfork itself have anything to do with this, though? I mean, technically.
Technically, you could just, like, take handfuls or armfuls of straw and just toss them up in the air and do the exact same thing. The pitchfork just makes it a lot easier and less difficult.
But the action of throwing it up is not anything to do with the actual separation of it?
No, that's just to get it to the wind. It doesn't seem like it. It best just seems to get it to the wind.
If there was no wind, then it would just fall back.
Exactly. You kind of need to get it to where like the air current's higher wind is, and by tossing up in the air a little bit, you have the opportunity for the things to space out, and then wind to come in and do its job. So Ramon pointed out that we learned a very important principle in Malacha Shabbos from this definition, from the fact that Zorah, is even in Avmalacha, we get a very, very important cloud. Chavakama, our Mesef is here, and Daf Samach compares Zorah to a fire which spread through wind. If you guys have done anything with fire, you know that the definition of Eish itself is that it moves the idea of Racher. It doesn't have its own koach that causes it to move the way an animal does. It needs wind in order to cause it to travel. So I guess you have to figure out exactly what the case is, but fire, which spreads through wind, there's at least a chance for a puzzle for Grama. While here, by Hilchos Shabbos, it's a fear of Mizaraisa. So why would I call Nezek using wind Grama, but a Malach on Shabbos using wind a fear of Mizaraisa? Why shouldn't I call that Grama and say that's not my action? I didn't do anything wrong. I just tossed something up into the air. It's the wind which did the actual separation. Why is that my fault? So Rav Ashi brings that we know the klal for Hilchos Shabbos is Meleches Machsheves Asur Torah. But sometimes that's a kula, sometimes, like here, it's going to be a chumrah. The Rush explains that line, that since this is the normal way to do the melacha, we can't call it grama in Hilchos Shabbos. So Meleches Machsheves Asur Torah means we can expand the definition of what my actions are to include a situation where I'm doing something which involves, let's say, other kohos, not specifically my own koach, but since that's a normal way to do something, it's as if I was involved all the way through. Mishnah Berurah applies this idea to a different malacha. It's not just Zorah where this is relevant. This is the Mishnah Berurah commenting on Shin, Tet, Zion, Sifrat, and Yod. In the Shari Tzion, Yud Gimel makes it explicit. He explains that a trapper who scares his deer to allow his dog to catch it. I think your Nevisal Mishnah Berurah pointed out that we generally are not fans of hunting with dogs with a plow. There are a lot of problems hunting for sport, hunting not for sport, using dogs, a lot of issues, but if it's somehow justified, if you're scaring a deer to allow your dog to catch it, you're going to be over on Seda. But who did the actual act of trapping? Who actually caught the deer? It was the dog. So how could it be? Why am I getting how can I get called out for Seda if my dog did the actual trapping? Maybe I was goring, right? It was grumma that I scared the deer, and that allowed my dog to catch it. But why should I be over on the Melacha D'oraisa? Through grumma. So Mishnah Berurah says, applies this principle from Zorah, that since this is a normal way to do the Melacha, this is Darkon, Shal Tzayadim, therefore it's going to be, it's the full-fledged Izzer, even though technically it would just be called grumma. So we see from Zohar that using the wind, since that's the normal way to do the melacha, it's bechlal meleches machsheves, and that's going to be applied to other melachos. Okay, so that was the definition that we find in the Bavli. Zohar is separating the kash, the solas, the husk from the seed using wind power, using air power. The Yerushalmi seems to have a little bit of a different definition. This is in the seventh parak of the second halacha, Zayin Beis, and most often, I think it's a Mem Tes Malif. He adds that using wind or air power to scatter a substance, the big kicker, the big difference is, even without selection or separation, is going to be a problem, is going to be the Malacha of Zorah. Right? The big difference is you don't need to be separating A from B. It's just a question of scattering a substance. The example that it gives is you're not allowed to spit into the wind. You're not allowed to spit into the wind because the wind is going to scatter the spit, and now you've been over and over. That's a very different definition, and it, fittingly, the Yerushalmi, this is all brought down by Irving Mohn, the Yerushalmi never asks that question that we referenced before, what's the difference between Zora, Borer, and Rakid? Why does that make a lot of sense? Exactly. The way that the Yerushalmi is defining the Malacha, it really has nothing to do, or at least in essence, doesn't have anything to do with separating good from bad. It's just a question of scattering using wind power. It's a very different perspective on what the Malacha of Zorah is. Both are happening, right? When I toss a pile into the air, things are getting scattered using the wind. That's not incorrect, but it's a very different perspective on the Malacha than the Bavli had. So most of the practical applications of the Malacha of Zorah comes from this Yerushalmi, which is interesting because it almost didn't make it into the halachic corpus at all. Not really spoken about, nobody really quotes it, and then the Ramah brings this up and says, hey guys, just letting you know, Shin Yud Test, I think. Yeah, in Shin Yud Test, sort of at the very, very end of the Ramah just throws in and just letting everybody know there's a Yerushalmi out there that says that Zorah is just scattering a substance as opposed to separating between good and bad, and therefore all these things suddenly become relevant. We're going to go through a lot of these cases using the Yerushalmi definition as opposed to the Bavli. I think like the only real, we'll get to the practical application of the Bavli. There's like one practical application of the Bavli Zorah, aside from Zorah itself, aside from like literally taking a pitchfork and winnowing a pile of grain, which generally is not happening for any of us. So there's like one practical application of the Bavli, but once you bring the Yerushalmi, there are a few more. Really, it's not the most relevant of those Malachos, but once you bring the Yerushalmi, there are a few more that you can talk about. There are a few more to deal with. Okay, so the Mishnah Brura on that Ramah, Shin Yud Tes Yud Zayin, says that he hasn't seen anybody who's really choshesh with this Yerushalmi. Rabbi Akiva Eger thought it's not a concern because it's a Dover Shin Miskavin, and there Zorah Bekach. It is really unclear why the Ramah even decided to bring this down, and what was the Yerushalmi trying to say. Like, it doesn't really seem to fit so well, but we're much happier with the Bavli definition of Zorah than with what the Yerushalmi seems to be saying. The Alfei Menashe even tries to re-explain the Yerushalmi as not talking about the Ad Malacha of Zorah at all, which is very surprising. It seems to be pretty clear that he was trying to tell you that you're over on Zorah, but this Alfei Menashe says that what was the Yerushalmi saying? When you spit into the wind, what have you been over on? I guess what happens when you spit into the wind, in addition to the spit scattering?
Zorah.
Well, okay, Zorah is an interesting question. Why don't we talk about Zorah? It may just be not enough to like have a significant impact. That's an interesting question. That's an interesting point. Where is the spit going? Right, but is it going directly down? Is it traveling? The wind, assuming the wind is involved, it travels. So the Alfei Menashe wants to say that the Yerushalmi is really talking about a totally different Av, the Av of Hosah and Ha'avarah. And you're causing the spit to travel Dalet Amos. This is more like Zorik. I think somebody even suggested that we should change the gear cell. It's a pretty simple gear change to make. Instead of Zoret, just make that hay a little bit longer on the left side, and it becomes Zorik. Which is pretty cool. It's pretty intuitive. Instead of that, somebody just lost that little end of the leg of the hay. It should have been Zorik, but it became Zoret. I think in context it is being discussed. It's being discussed in the context of like Zorah stuff, not nowhere near the Hosah Gemaras, so that makes it a little bit more difficult to say that. But you could understand, like the Alfei Menashe, that it wasn't a Zorah problem at all, it was a Ha'avara problem. And that would totally knock your Yerushalmi out of any sort of application, but the Ramah does bring it down, which means that we need to deal with it. Bir Halacha thought that maybe the Yerushalmi was really talking about Zorah, but it was limited to specifically spit. It was limited to specifically Rikika, spit, because Zorah is only Shayas to the Gidule Karka. We had a similar idea by Dush. We said that Dush is only Shayas to the Gidule Karka, which is Machlokes in the Gemara, with Kosar, we spoke about fish. I think Dush, we spoke about salt, gathering salt deposits. So we could say the same thing by Zohar, and in this respect, we'll call people and animals, since they're nourished by Yidulei Karka, we'll call people Yidulei Karka also, which is a little bit far-fetched, but we do see that in halacha sometimes. So then spit would qualify for Yidulei Karka as well. But a bottle of water, that would mean that there's no problem, there would be no problem taking a bottle of water and like just shaking out the last couple of drafts from an open window, even though that water is going to be scattered by the wind, because the water is not Yidulei Karka. Water is clearly a separate status, so it would limit this Yerushalmi and this Ramah only to apply to spit, which is Yidulei Karka, as opposed to stam water. So at the end of the day, for this question, the Chai Adam brings down spitting as us Midir Rabbanan, not Midir Raisa, because not that it is a extension of Zohar, but rather it's similar to Zohar. Maybe it looks like Zohar. So it's Oser, Midir Rabbanan, it does not, at least according to the Chai Adam, it does not qualify for a full-fledged Tolda, for the full-fledged Tolda of Zohar, but at least Midir Rabbanan, better to avoid. Spitting into the wind, better to avoid, because it's similar to Zohar. Alright, just to restate, we said that we have these two definitions of Bavli and Yerushalmi. The Yesod of the Machlokas seems to be, is the problem separating Ochel from Soles, that was the Bavli, or is it just a question of scattering something into smaller pieces, that was the Yerushalmi. So what are the practical examples? The only one that seems to be based on the Bavli's definition is that if I have like a pile of, like a bag of peanuts, already shelled, we don't have to deal with the dust problem we spoke about last time. I have a bag of peanuts, so you have like that really thin red layer that people sometimes don't like to eat that covers the peanuts, where you have the hard outer shell, and then like a very, like a paper thin red shell that goes over the actual peanut itself. So if you take a big handful, and then you want to get rid of those, like the very thin papery shells, and you blow into your hand to get those pieces, like to blow those pieces off. So you are basically acting like the wind in a classical Zohar scenario. You're winnowing the pile to get rid of that, so to get rid of that paper thin shell. That would be the bodily definition of Zohar. Okay, so we have this, and that's not something which is going to happen too often. Yerachal Shulchan actually tries to say that would be mutter. He thinks that using wind, actual wind, as opposed to your breath, is a definitional part of the melacha, that you're only over on Zohar when, like, the wind that God created, that the trees create, however it works, is involved in doing winnowing and is involved in separating, but like nobody holds that way. So the sack is l'isser. We would not, basically don't do this if you're eating peanuts, don't blow away the shells with your mouth. That would be Bavli's Zohar. The other examples are all based on the Yerushalmi. So Rav Nemtzel in his Mishnah Berurah, he brings down one of the notes on the bottom, that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was Aser Sprayed. Tarsisim, I had to look up that word, Tarsisim sprays are also because of this Yerushalmi. Right? You're creating, you're taking a liquid and you're causing it to separate into the air, to go out as a mist. That would be a problem because of this Yerushalmi. Rav Nemtzel himself felt that even Rav Shlomo Zalman would be matir if the contents were not Yidulei Karka. Like we said, this Zohar seems to be limited to Yidulei Karka. I don't know if it's Yasser, just like Kotzer, or just like Dush. So if the contents were not Yidulei Karka, it seems like Rav Nemtzel felt that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach would be matir. Rav Rimon brought down this and discussed in the Hasid Talk, Dan Weiss, one of the famous posts, a lot of important shitos. He has some interesting machlokes with Rav Moshe Feinstein. Dishwashing is a big one. He's the one who says you need to have a big plastic tub in your sink. If you only have one sink, you need a big plastic tub for both milk and meat in order to wash without tricking up. You're not going to really trick anything up. But in order to wash the dishes in the best possible way, Rav Avadi Yosef discusses this in Yechavadat Vav Chafei. Both of them are matir. Their context was a perfume spray. Right? You have a bottle of perfume and then like the squeezy thing at the end to make the perfume come out. That's going to be working the same way as a normal spray bottle. So they were both matir. What's the svara? The Yerushalmi was oser, using wind to scatter a substance, rather than separate ochel from solus. Right? That was the definition of the Yerushalmi zora. You're scattering a substance using the wind. So the pu'ula, right, we spoke about pu'ulas and tosas, the pu'ula is similar to normal zoreh, even though the tosa is different. Normal zoreh, you are separating A from B. The pu'ula of Yerushalmi, the action of Yerushalmi zoreh, is similar to scattering something with the wind, even though the tosa is very different. So what happens with the spray bottle? Do we have a pu'ula that's similar? And do we have a totsah that's similar? If neither the pu'ula nor the totsah end up being similar to actual zoriah, we're going to be able to avoid an issue of zoriah. So what's going on here with the spray bottle with our perfume bottle? Here, the pu'ula is different because it's caused by a person with no wind, right? There's no wind involved, there's no real air currents involved really at all. It's a person pushing a button, releasing pressure. So the pu'ula is very different. The totsah is different also, because there's no opal, there's no psoles, it's just a cloud of whatever's inside the bottle of liquid coming out as a mist, coming out as a spray. So the pu'ula, the action is different. The totsah is different. Therefore, I think this was the Minchas Yitzchak Svara, therefore it can't be that there's any problem.
This is
a Rimon quoting Minchas Yitzchak, yeah. So, but like we saw, a person separating ofel from soles by blowing the shells from the peanuts, even though that's a different pu'ula, right, it's me blowing as opposed to the wind doing the work, still the totsah is the same, that's why that one was awesome. Right, so the difference between the blowing the peanuts off the shelves, that's a similar totsah, even though the pu'ula is very different. Here, with the spray bottles, we have neither side is similar. Neither the action is similar because there's no involvement of wind. You're just doing it yourself, pushing the button. And the totsah is very different. There's no separation between substance A, substance B. It's just causing something to separate into the ether. Good. Ribiat and those gray, usually gray, the old versions of red, 39 Malachos book where he goes through each Malachah, very, very useful. He was machalic between different types of sprays. He gets really deep into the Matthias here, but normal sprays are aerosols, basically work on pressure. Right, so there's liquid inside the bottle, everything is its contents of the can are pressurized, that's why you don't throw those cans into the fire, because they explode, because the pressure has contents, terrible idea. So, normal aerosol cans, those are mutter, because the liquid is not really being separated by wind. What causes the wind, the spray, like what causes the spray to, I guess, come out into the world as a spray instead of a liquid? So pressure is what gets up the tube. What's the very end of the tube? Unless you like inspecting your deodorant cabinet, you're not going to know this. Apparently, the way it works is there are tiny holes in the tube at the end of this tube, which the liquid is reinforcing to. So the pressure forces the liquid up this tube and gets pushed out a bunch of tiny little holes. So it's coming out of the mist, not because the involvement of air pressure, not because the involvement of wind, but rather because that's how the end of the tube looks. It's like forcing it through, I don't know, a spaghetti strainer, like when you made...
There's those water bottles, when there's those water picture things that they have it'll turn around,
it's
like
how they
straight lines.
Right, exactly, similar to that. So no one's going to call that zoda. No one's going to say you're winnowing the water and you're causing the water to separate through wind, because it's very clearly not wind, it's just the end of the lines in the top of the pitcher. So your deodorant can, normal aerosols work in the exact same way. You have a bunch of holes, and the liquid is being forced through those, and they're coming out of the mist. So there's no involvement of air. It's not being dispersed or scattered by air or wind. So there, not at all, again, it's not similar to Zoriah, and neither the pu'ula, the maisa, or the totsah. For the same reason, you know, like cool water faucets in your kitchen sink have like the little button you can push to change it from normal stream to like the harder individual, I don't know, spray style, whatever it is, so it's the exact same thing. You're not causing wind to get in there and mess up the stream. It's just they're going through the tiny little individual holes on the faucet head. Same reason, it's not going to be a problem with the zoriah there. Rubia says that there's a different type of like sprayer can type of thing, a different type of tarsis. It's called a venturi tube sprayer. Is anybody familiar with a venturi tube sprayer? Neither am I, but according to Rubia, basically this would be awesome because the spraying effect is caused by the involvement of air pressure and then like wind or air current. Don't ask me how it works. Air pressure, higher air pressure, lower air pressure, it's all complicated. I'm not a physicist, but if you ever come across something that says this is powered by a venturi tube effect, you should not use that on Shabbos. And then call me and tell me what you found about it. Okay, a couple more. You should not shake out your tablecloth with crumbs into the wind on Shabbos. Shulchan Aruch Harav talks about this in the context of Shabbos Erev Pesach. Right? Shabbos Erev Pesach is a really big problem whenever that happens because you need to have something to eat over Shabbos. You need to have hummus over Shabbos. You generally can't have matzah yet. But you can't do You can't do tashbitzi. You can't get rid of the chametz because it's Shabbos. You can't make fire. You can't burn anything. What are you supposed to do with all of your chametz? So it's a really big question. You also have to finish eating by a certain time, by pretty early on in the day. So a lot of talk about it for Shabbos or Pesach. So Shulchan Aruch Harat says, even though normally you shouldn't be shaking out the tablecloth filled with crumbs into the wind because Zohar problems, told of Zohar, specifically to avoid being over on by your Rabbi Matei, the Oraisa will allow you to do this Derabanan, will allow you to shake out the tablecloth specifically on Shabbos or Pesach, even though normally it would be a problem of Zohar. Why is it a problem of Zohar? Because you, in this situation, you're definitely using the wind to scatter the crumbs. You don't want the crumbs to just like land on your front sidewalk. You want them to be scattered by the wind. So there, you're using the wind to scatter a substance. That's almost exactly the Yerushalmi's Zohar, and therefore the Ramah says, based on the Ramah, we should not do that. Men definitely should be avoided. If you don't care about the crumbs being scattered versus staying in one place, you're dumping them somewhere where no one's going to be going, your backyard, whatever it is, you don't really care. If it gets scattered, then it would be mutter, it's considered a davar shein miskaven. You don't care whether the wind grabs the crumbs or not, davar shein miskaven in this case would be fine. Like we said, if you do want the crumbs scattered, then yesh la'asor should be avoided. Just a couple more examples. Don't blow dust off of an old book, off of an old bookshelf, using your mouth to scatter a substance. It is a little bit removed. Number one, you don't have the wind involved. It's your own breath. And also, you're not separating between two substances. You're scattering two substances. But it's an extension of the same idea. And you probably shouldn't blow extra sugar off of a donut. That's for two reasons. Number one, extension of Zohar. And number two, why would you ever blow extra sugar? I'm not sure what the case was there, but it was brought down, so I thought it might be worth saying. Again, if you ever meet somebody who do this, stop them. Well, probably shouldn't. Yeah, you definitely stop them and explain the two reasons that you're stopping them for. They will definitely appreciate it. That's Zohar. Next week, we're going to be dealing with Borer. We probably have to have like 15 shrimp on Borer because it's apparently huge. Comes up every Shabbos, all questions, anytime you eat chickens, you're dealing with border problems. Anytime you want to put swarm back on the shelf, you're dealing with border problems. Anytime you want to set the table for Shabbos, you're probably dealing with border problems. It's really crazy. So, next week.